Okay, folks, we're back. It wasn't quite 2 minutes here, but I just wanted to go ahead and save the chat. I wanted to go ahead and save the speaking here. Anyway, so we're pretty well agreed that Zog Babylon isn't going to last very long. I was wondering, Gary, I mean, there's more prophecy in the Bible than just simply revelations here. I was looking at Joel chapter 2. Now, there was a song in the Worldwide Church of God called Blow the Horn, Let Zion Hear, and it was taken from Joel chapter 2 here. And they'd say, blow the horn, let Zion hear, for God's day is now at hand. Let the people tremble in this day of clouds and gloominess. Troops so great and mighty strong, there has never been the like. And it went on for about not quite 2 minutes here. But in Joel chapter 2, it says underneath the terribleness of God's judgments. Verse 1, Joel chapter 2. Blow you the trumpet in Zion, and sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord cometh, for it is nigh at hand. A day of darkness and of gloominess, a day of clouds and of thick darkness, as the morning spread upon the mountains, a great people and strong, there has not ever been the like, neither shall be any more after it, even to the years of many generations. A fire devours before them, and behind them a flame burneth. The land is as the Garden of Eden before them, and behind them a desolate wilderness, yea, and nothing shall escape them. So they're saying that when these mighty people come in, what is before will look like the Garden of Eden compared to what they leave behind. Verse 4, the appearance of them is as the appearance of horses, and as horsemen so shall they run. Verse 5, like the noise of chariots on the tops of mountains shall they leap, like the noise of a flame of fire that devours the stubble, as a strong people set in battle array. Verse 6, now folks, when you're talking about burning stubble, that reminds me of Obadiah 1:18, and I don't mean the transgendered Aussie poofter here, I mean where it says that Esau Edom shall be like a stubble which is burned before Israel. Now Obadiah is, the shortest book in the Old Testament. But going on, I think it's only about one chapter long here. Before verse 6 of Joel chapter 2, before their face the people shall be much pained, all faces shall gather blackness. Verse 7, they shall run like mighty men, they shall climb the wall like men of war, and they shall march every one on his ways, and they shall not break their ranks. Verse 8, neither shall one thrust another. They shall walk every one his path, and when they fall upon the sword, they shall not be wounded. So you're talking about fairly invincible troops. Verse 9, they shall run to and fro in the city, they shall run up on the walls, they shall climb it up the houses, and they shall enter in at the windows like a thief. Verse 10, the earth shall quake before them, the heavens shall tremble, the sun and the moon shall be dark, and the stars shall withdraw their shinings. So they were saying, troops so great and mighty strong, there's never been the like. They run in houses, through the windows leap, earth is quaking as they come, heaven shakes, stars cease to shine, then the sun and moon become both black. This was Dwight Armstrong. He was, I think, Herbert Armstrong's more talented, more decent brother. He was quite a hymn. He would give these hymns here. Verse 11, and the Lord shall utter his voice before his army, for his camp is very great, for he is strong that executeth his word, for the day of the Lord is great and very terrible, and who can abide it? So, I don't know, Logan, Gary, when do you think, when do you think Joel chapter 2 will be fulfilled? What prophecy, you know, when this prophecy, when do you think it shall happen here? Do you think it'll happen, you know, at the same time as Revelation chapter 19? Okay, well, the judgment day occurs, the great judgment day occurs after, you know, after the millennium and, you know, people rebel. That's the, you know, that's the also that here. So I was just wondering, you know, Joel chapter 2. Now, it goes ahead and points out that you have, it seems like you have mighty troops of Yahweh. You know, I mean, could that be sort of like the 10,000 warlords? You know, you know, I was just sort of wondering about that here. I had quite a biblical education in the Worldwide Church of God, sitting in them folding steel chairs here quite a bit here. So, let's see. Okay, it looks like we have a Nimbuster Tard. Number 17, if you're going to go ahead and talk, you know, homo crap here, I'm going to go ahead and block your ass, 17. You know what I mean? In case, let's see here. Yeah.
Oh, no, there's guys, when you look in the Old Testament, there's a whole bunch of them that follows in that day. You'll hear that expression over and over and over, and those are the prophecies that I think that are coming yet.
Okay.
Maybe some men here a little bit, but it says in that day, there's just many, many prophecies. I think in Isaiah is one of them, Jeremiah, in that day you'll see it. So I think there are prophecies to come, and of course, the people who have never read the Old Testament, that's been done away with, they're not going to read it anyhow, and they're not going to get taught from the pulpits. I want to make a comment about last night, okay?
Sure. Tuesday night. About, you know, was this about when I was facing the book of Joshua?
Yeah.
Okay.
And what Logan had been reading and teaching. What's interesting, if you look at that, you will never hear any messages ever over the course of the years that I ever went to church on these particular subjects, because it lined up with the Judeo message of the Jews being chosen and all the crazy stuff, because it Israel from the Israelites and the other people for being whatever they are. You following me?
Yeah.
So you never hear it. So then you talk to them, or you teach them from a radio program like this, you have to be very specific and very slow, and so they can get it. When I was first approached on this message, and I told you, I was just a dumb idiot. I thought I knew everything. As a Baptist, I didn't know anything when it comes to especially the Old Testament. And I'm speaking from you know, my own personal thing. So many times, when you've been in this for a while, you take for granted, when you read or when you make a study, people understand it, but they don't understand it. Okay, I didn't understand it. How can you understand something you've never read? How can you understand something, even if you did read it, gloss over it, you know, they've done the fish stories and all these things out of the Old Testament, but they were things for little children, okay? The meat of it was done last Tuesday, and Friday, when you all got into that scripture, and you're saying, here's what happened when Israel did this, here's what happened when Moses made the error, and here's what happened when Moses held up his hands, and here's what happened when Joshua, who was the right-hand man of Moses himself, saw what Moses did, and he made the same error over and over. We have to be careful, guys, that we don't make the same error that Joshua makes and Moses makes at the same time, because our forefathers in this country, and the pulpits have made more error than anything that's ever happened in the history of the world. This is supposed to be the blessed nation. This is supposed to be the nation of Israel, okay? This is supposed to be our forte, and we've insulted it from border to border to ocean to ocean. We just made this thing a melting pot, so to speak. That's what they call it. This was not supposed to be a melting pot. This is supposed to be the house, the land of Israel, where the tribes would produce and we'd get along and we'd have blessings of our Lord. We could rest our land in the seventh year. We could have this 49th year rest, and we could have the Golden Jubilee rest, and we wouldn't lose our land to these so-called Jews that come in here and of the usury and everything. I said to one guy, oh, these Jews are chosen? Well, they're chosen. How come they don't follow the law of usury? Okay? How come they don't follow the law of usury? That's the first thing they do is set up usury. But anyhow, I know I've ran a little bit, but boy, it's so important. It's so important to bring these scriptures up, and it's so important to teach them. It's so important to learn more ourselves, because this is what's going to save the United States of America, or our fellow nations of Germany. And they tell me that in Germany and these places are all got down to just white power. Okay? And that's probably what it is in this country, a lot of white power. I've been around them. Are they good people? In the main? But what do they know about Yahweh's law? Nothing. Nothing. And that's sad. That is really sad. And I was in that sad statistic, guys. I knew nothing about Yahweh's laws. I knew nothing about how I should act, how I should produce, how I should act as a farmer. I knew nothing. I was of absolutely zero value to anybody. Zero. Okay? And that's a hell of an admission, isn't it? You live your life out thinking what you're doing is right, and all you did is you propagated the message of the Judeo Church, and you gave to them, so they sent missionaries to all over the world and everywhere else. And all it says in the New Testament, we read it over and over, but they never read that very often. Not only come to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, go you not to the Samaritans and these foreigners and all these different places. But where did we go? What did I do? We spent lots of tithe money. Okay, doing all these silly things. And I know it sounds like a preacher a little bit here, but my heart just cries out to the house of Israel. The men and women who should know better, but they don't know better, because where are they going to get taught? When is the last time you ever heard anything taught in the pulpits of America about the law, except the law of giving 10%?
Well, they don't. They believe the law. They believe the law's been done away with.
Except the 10%. Your tithe, okay? They want to go back to the Old Testament for that. But they don't tell you how you should live, how you should take care of your land. Nothing whatsoever. And we're going to pay a penalty, guys, coming up for this land usage. When you see these great big four-wheelers going by full of chemicals, and behind them is a big truck. It's not like it used to be a little tall thing. Now these are these great big trucks, semis, pulling like a big milk truck, pulling these chemicals, pulling this big thing down the road. They go by here, I don't know how many times a day, spraying for funguses, spraying for this disease and that disease, and for bugs and weeds and on, you know. Martin, in the 40s, we didn't even know what sprays were. Okay? We didn't have a clue what was going on. And we fed the world then. They said, without Monsanto, we couldn't feed the world. We couldn't feed ourselves.
Why? I mean, Monsanto has destroyed sustainable agriculture. I've been in Germany. I've been in Germany. They intensively farm their land. But they don't over farm. They don't over You'll see Herman the German. He may end up having about 20 cows, and they live in his rock pile of a house on the bottom basement. And essentially, here he is with his rubber boots, shoveling the straw and the dung, into a trough here, and then getting John Deere has green and yellow. Well, Mengele has blue and white. You know what I mean? Essentially, Mengele is sort of like the John Deere of Germany, and they have their little manure wagons. And what they do is they compost the stuff, and they intensively farm Germany. But they know they cannot afford to do. They know they cannot afford to do what they do in the United States here. What gets me is that most of the land, compared, that's what got me when I was stationed in Germany for 19 months, is how intensively farmed, how intensively farmed and how intensively forested Germany is. It is literally husbanded, just like Adam did with the Garden of Eden. It is intensively farmed here, and you don't see any of the like here, except in maybe small towns and in Indiana and southern Michigan, it being done like that. In America, increasingly, you just see most of these pastures here, and they're just grazed out for cattle, and occasionally they're you don't see the intensity of agriculture in, say, Missouri that you did, you don't see a third of it as you did in Germany. But on the other hand, in Germany, they can afford to rape the land like they do with Monsanto and all these other places here. They've turned the land into sort of like a sponge of essentially, and it could work when oil was able to be pumped out, for what, $20 a barrel, and essentially gasoline was $1 a gallon. It was able to be done that way. But you can't go ahead and do that sort of thing. Neither can China. I mean, China's sort of given up on making a whole bunch of stuff, but what they've done is they built empty cities and empty towns. Yeah.
I got a question for Gary.
Sure.
Herman the German is pretty much more organic, and they take better care of the land than the average farmer in America. But America's got more raw land, so they can afford to ruin the land and move on to the next plot of land. But once you use these chemicals and you use these bastard seeds, and you go and you break out these laws and you pollute the land, and not even count the air and the water that's polluted. Once you pollute the land and ruin the land, how long does it take to even try to recover to get back to organic farming? How much time and money and effort is it going to take to say that 100 acres, like say you got 100 acre farm and you've been using Monsanto or chemicals, how long does it take to go back to turn the farm back to organic? Basically, a lot of land has been ruined, hasn't it, Gary?
Yeah, and the answer to that, I think, is in Revelation chapter 21. The Father said, it is so bad. He says, not only am I going to create a new heaven, I'm going to recreate the earth. I'm going to create a new earth. Because John
said, Yahweh said, destroy America, he's going to destroy the whole earth, so we're not going to save America. It's so bad, Yahweh's got to destroy the heaven and earth to create a whole new earth. I agree, Gary.
That's my opinion.
It's so bad, we can't save it. No, we can't save America. We can't save the world. Yahweh doesn't want to save it. He wants to destroy it and create something perfect. And let's say it's polluted.
Maybe I'll do that. And I know that if you switch from commercial farming, you have a 3-year wait in order to you have to farm organic for
buyers use organic practices, and then you can certify the land, okay? This property here was certified the first year because of our practices. We were not certified organic, but because of how we farmed, they certified it the very first year, okay? Which is quite unusual. They had to go before a panel of whoever they were, okay? I really had nothing to do with it. The neighbor got it certified, okay? So it wasn't any...
Okay.
But because of our... And people knew that we're organic, you know, or in the neighborhood. They knew our history here, so that was true. But I don't even think that organically, they're using hybrids, okay? Once you use a hybrid in the field, I don't think you can ever really balance the soil back up again. Because, for instance, corn does not take up any manganese. Some of these plants, specifically if the plant is not to reproduce itself, the seed will not have manganese in it. Manganese is the reproduction mineral, okay, from the soil. Corn, the hybrid corn, take lots of zinc. They'll eat the zinc up. But I'm not sure what GMO does. I'm not get close enough to those guys. But I think you're absolutely right. I don't think there's any way of really, you know, where we're going to do anything. You know, to do it. The only way he is going to have to, you know, he's going to have to take care of the enemy, and then he's going to have to set things in state for a new heaven and a new earth. They'll include the earth with, and I'm sure we talked about it before with Martin and you, Logan, about the woodpecker thing that's up in Russia, and then we got the one up in Alaska, sending out these thousands of kilowatts of power.
The Tesla weapons in Alaska. It's the HARP, the HARP Tesla weapons that they can modify the weather.
Right.
And supposedly, that can also attack your, I think they're using it for mind control also.
I've been writing about this genetically, GMO food, Gary, it changes
people's DNA. It's destroying their DNA. It's actually, they're going to live a lot shorter lifespan. They're going to get all kinds of diseases and cancers. The GMOs are really bad out of the human consumption.
It's amazing that as smart as the people are, or they think they aren't educated as they think they are, they could even pull this off. But to give you an example, how much power this company has, that's why I'm very skeptical of anything that they do with their power. They had a vote in Oregon not so long ago that the people could vote that everything that was genetically modified had to be notified on the package, okay? And guess what? Monsanto beat it. That's Oregon. Oregon, if you're in Oregon, you'll find there's a lot of people there that are inorganic. There's a lot of people that support organic. There's a lot of people that support the law. But yet, when it comes to the vote of the whole state, Monsanto beat them. So they don't have to identify GMO products in Oregon. But you can see how power they have. And of course, this Thomas, the Supreme Court judge, was the head lawyer, one of the head big boys for Monsanto. And now he's the Supreme Court justice. So they've got somebody sitting right there where they need to be in order to continue doing whatever they're going to do in their evilness, okay?
Yeah.
But it's I still maintain, guys, and I can be wrong, but it started in the pulpits of America.
Oh, yeah. It started by Jews and those who essentially wanted to corrupt the morals and tell people that they could get something for nothing. I mean, it started, you know, I mean, Hunter Wallace over on Occidental Descent, he's pointing out these abolitionists. They're the ones who, they're the ones with all their stupid crap. Now, like Mark Twain admitted that the Bible didn't say a single thing against slavery. Paul didn't say anything against slavery. Christ didn't say anything against slavery. Moses didn't say anything against slavery. They did say that you only enslaved and you only enslaved somebody for his debts or because he was a criminal and couldn't pay for his, you know. But and they said is that yeah, you would keep him for 7 years, but at the end you would set him up. You would go ahead and set him up because essentially he was in many ways your sort of brother here. The Bible did not say a single thing against slavery, but here are these, you know, these crazy wannabe Baal priests here who believe in Unitarianism and Universalism, who are saying that niggers are the same as Israelites, and therefore they should not be enslaved intergenerationally. It didn't really matter that a nigger who made it to the United States here, or even to Mississippi, where they worked them the hardest, lived twice as long as a nigger that was in the wild. I read Alex Haley. I got a little, I bought for a quarter, and every so often I was reading it here, Roots by Alex, you know, Haley. Now, he was a plagiaristic nigger who stole the book from the Africans by some white guy who went ahead and wrote about it about 5 years before Roots came out, and then he just went ahead and plagiarized most of it. But even he admits that in Africa, during the summer or something like that, niggers starved. Niggers starved because niggers did not have enough, you know, niggers starved, and, you know, in many cases, the old and the very young didn't make it here. Niggers starved. Of course, niggers also ate one another in places like the Congo as well. And, you know, this old heathen, Kurt Saxon used to have a book called Root Rot here, and essentially admits that niggers killed and ate one another. But, you know, even in Roots here, you know, in Ghana, you know, during the slave coast here, the niggers would not maintain much of a store, and rather than kill and eat their goats, they would just simply let the old niggers and the very young niggers, you know, baby niggers, starve to death. So, you know, pretty well the infant mortality was around, what, 50% here. That's why there weren't, you know, that's why niggers didn't overpopulate Africa. But no, I mean, you know, he admitted that when they got sent to, say, Maryland and Virginia and sold, what, about a decade before the Revolutionary War, old Kunta Kinte was 16, and he got sold in 1767 at Annapolis or something like that, Maryland, and got sold to somebody in Virginia, and the stupid nigger would run off even though he didn't have any place to run off to. You know what I mean? I mean, it's stupid. There were no, quote, northern, there were no northern states which would let let some nigger slave run off anywhere, and he got caught, and he got choice between being castrated or have his foot cut off, and he chose to have his foot cut off, and then he stopped running around anymore. But essentially, Alex Haley admitted that in Africa, niggers starved. You know what I mean? Niggers starved, because I guess they were stupid niggers. You know, at least the white man made them work.
I got to ask you this, though, Martin. I mean, you can make the point that the Mexicans and blacks are going to have a better quality of life living in a white country, but the most important thing is the white people are not going to have a better life. It's going to destroy us. There's going to be race mixing, and it's going to destroy our economy, and it's going to destroy our morals and values. We are not to live among all these other races, including blacks.
Yeah. Well, there were these idiot Bostonian people who thought they were righteous essentially he started this abolitionist. And, you know, like Mark Twain, you know, he would scoff quite a bit. He was somewhat of an agnostic or atheist, but Mark Twain at least admitted the Bible didn't say a single thing against slavery at all. And that's true. Did it? Did the Bible say anything?
Hold on now. The Bible's only written for the white race.
Yeah.
So, it was lawful for a white man to have slaves, but it wasn't lawful for a white man to enslave another white man if they owed him a debt and they couldn't pay it back. They would wander their debt off to a maximum of 7 years. That's the only lawful slavery in the scriptures. A slavery of other races in a white country is not.
Well, no, you're right. You're right, Logan. But even according to quote these Boston Brahims who was whining and pissing and moaning about the South, and I'm saying that the South was stupid to bring in all these damn niggers. You know what I mean? They were stupid to bring them in because
as far as back then they didn't have all the machines and big tractors and machinery. And it was very labor intensive. And up in the north, they did farm mostly. They had factories and textile mills, and that was mostly automated. And what few laborers they needed, all the white people could work on.
Well, and they pointed out the southern nigger, you know, was treated a lot better than, you know, immigrant whites were. You know, immigrant whites were, than the Irish were. Well, they didn't want niggers running wild and killing and eating one another. You know, I mean, heck, they were worth money, you know, in America. So essentially, no, they didn't want them teaching them voodoo or the rest here. I mean, pretty wild. The French sort of allowed that sort of thing, and the end result was Haiti. You know what I mean? Where these voodoo niggers, essentially, were just running wild, and they killed all the French here. Well, yeah, but, you know, they have, you know, I mean, these were frogs here. See, frogs didn't mind, you know, miscegenating, you know, I mean, you know, pretty well the Portuguese were the worst about miscegenating, and then the Spanish and the French here, they didn't mind miscegenating so much. They, you know, if you do read Richard Kelly Hoskins, he was talking about how you had these stupid Whiggers then. You know, they made the wrong mistake here. You know, Britain gave them the choice of, you know, in the peace of 1763, you know, at the end of the 7 Years' War, or as we call it, the French and Indian War, gave the King of France the option of essentially either getting back Santo Domingo, which was called Haiti then, and Martinique, essentially the French Sugar Islands or the French West Indies, gave them the choice of having that or having back Canada. Now, if the French king had had any sense, he really give a crap about his people. He said, "Well, hey, no, I'll keep Canada because essentially it's a place for my white poor French population for me to, well, essentially just ship over and keep from cluttering up France essentially as a colony. If he'd have cared for his people, but no, I mean Santo Domingo was the richest. It was a sick place here. White men died of malaria and yellow fever and that here, but they get real rich. They try to get real rich real quick. And so, essentially, all these sugar prophets were going to the king, you know, and his noblemen at Versailles. So essentially, he said, screw Canada. Yeah, British, you can have Canada. We get, you know, we get Santo Domingo, and we get the rest of it back. And later on, you had these stupid Whiggers who called themselves Amnesty Nord, which meant literally friends of the blacks. You know what I mean? Essentially, they called themselves friends of the niggers, is what they were. And, you know, they do stupid crap here. They do, you know, they have the same idea as abolitionists. And the end result was, within 20 years, the niggers killed all, you know, every single white French man, woman, and child that they could find. And, you know, you read about how they killed what? Oh, you know, killed the remainder of 22,000, you know, white people, you know, in the course of 3-4 days here. You know, forced them to drown, or they burned them alive, or they hacked them to death. I mean, you know, essentially these niggers, you know, essentially killed every white man, woman, and child they could find. You know what I mean? They didn't, that's what they did. And as a result, the South was thinking the abolitionists were trying to pull the same stupid crap. That was part of the reason behind the Civil War. So you had a lot of the stupid crap occur. Okay? You know, a lot of the stupid crap occur here. And essentially, Whiggers do the same stupid thing here. You will have some Whiggers who, you know, who essentially hate the brothers. About this farming here. It's not only the land which is being poisoned, it's a matter of essentially organic farming practices, like Gary practices, like the Amish and Mennonite practice here. You have these practices, and you don't have trained farmers. It takes a while to become a trained farmer. It's almost like an apprenticeship. It's almost like an apprenticeship in a millwright to run a factory or something like that. It takes someone who is trained, you know, in such practices. And, you know, it's not only the land which is being poisoned, it's essentially people who, well, essentially, you know, they want to plow, you know, using huge tractors which plow up a half acre, you know, a gang of 16 plows or discs or whatever at a time. And essentially you have these people trained to use these chemicals, these fertilizers, these herbicides, which are no longer sustainable when oil is, you know, anywhere from 100 to 150 and going higher. They are talking that, you know, essentially these Jews like Goldman Sachs and the rest, they got control, just like they did in 2008, of commodity prices. And among them is oil. And Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and the rest here, you know, there was no big demand of oil. There was no lack of supply. They raised the price of, you know, of gasoline and diesel fuel so high in order to make a profit. And essentially, they allowed, it used to be that essentially no company could, you know, could own more than what? You know, 2% of grain or of oil or of anything. You know, these commodities, it was determined that we can't afford to have speculators going ahead and cornering the market here and essentially, you know, pulling a George Soros or a Goldman Sachs on it. But I think they're back to their same old tricks here. You have in Egypt. Essentially what boils down to is under democracy you have what? About 85 million Egyptians, and their land will only probably support, what, 45 or 50 million of them maximum. So you end up having 30 or 40 million more people than the land will provide. So they have to live off of essentially all the money that is given them for not fighting with the Jews. Okay? They're bought off with billions of dollars. And essentially that foreign aid is spent in buying American grain to feed their population. Now they've run wild. Now essentially it doesn't really matter who is in charge. Be it Mubarak, be it this latest character who got deposed by the army, nobody's able to make something work here. And increasingly in the Zogland, nobody, be they Obongo, be the Jews, be they whatever, is going to make Zog work. As a result of, say, the Zimmerman trial, essentially every white man who's jumped by a nigger is going to think is that, shoot, my life is essentially over with because I'm going to be tried for murder for shooting this damn nigger that attacked me. You know what I mean? Right?
Yeah. Hey, Martin.
Yep.
I'm going to go ahead and get it.
So no show tomorrow then, huh?
Yeah, because we finished the book, and I'm just going to wait till I get ready to start a new book, okay?
That sounds good to me. I finished up the book of Joshua, so pretty well, I think we pretty well let the Jasher series pretty well come to an end here. So, in any case, I'll figure out what I'm going to do Tuesday. But, essentially you're not going to have a show tomorrow then, right? Okay. Well, alrighty. So I guess I'll listen to whatever lies the Obagender Bear or the Pisser Possum come up with tomorrow here. Maybe you can help me troll the Pisser Possum tomorrow here. They might as well go back to Wednesdays.
Okay.
All right.
Good night, Logan.
I'm going to take about a 2-minute break, and okay. we will be back since Logan has to
I'll
get up in the morning.
Okay.
All right, that sounds good here.
That's too long, but I'll be here for a little bit, okay?
All right. All right. All right. About 2-minute break here, folks. Hail victory.